I'm not sure how many people we're going to have here, but the parade was pretty packed with people. We're going to probably break an attendance record, and it looked like everyone was having fun at the parade today.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah.
The line was very long.
I'm much, but it's just that I don't have a first suit this time.
Tail's okay.
Yeah. But, you know, everyone's a furry even if you don't have a fursuit.
There's always next year.
Sorry?
There's always next year.
Yeah. Well, my fursuit's being made, so I'm excited.
I'm still looking for someone to make mine.
Hijack this for a moment.
Yes.
I don't have my badge. Oh, there's my badge. Oh my god, yeah. I have my badge. Well, I mean, if you want to be in sound,
you showing up.
Yeah, do not volunteer.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, we're always looking for staff, so if you're interested in staffing, we're more than happy to have you. So thank you for hosting a panel this year. I greatly appreciate it. So, hi, I'm Salem. I'm the panel's department head. And I just want to talk to you for a moment about our panel department feedback. On the door, there is a QR code in which you can scan. There's a couple questions that you'll be able to answer to help us do better for next year. We're always looking to improve. We're always looking to better serve the community. And those questions help us for next year. That being said, for the time that you put into it, your feedback then qualifies you for a slot to potentially win one of the panel room banners. That will be that drawing will be at closing ceremonies, and we hope to see all the wonderful feedback. We love it. But thank you.
These mics, they keep dying anytime I turn them on. It will like go
is
on.
There battery dying? Or?
Okay. Is there a way to like manually?
No one. Batteries. 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 Those are double A's. Those are triple A's, but let me just
they'll turn on and then they like will go off within like a minute.
That does not know how it's supposed to come off.
Hi, welcome. Hi everyone.
Hello.
Bear with me with the mic issues. These are like turning on and then they keep turning off. I was in this room yesterday for a panel and it was also an issue, so I will try my best. I have folks helping me with the batteries, so hopefully we should be good to go on that. So my name is Magnolia. My Sona's name is Pizzazz, if you've seen me around. And I am asexual and demi-romantic, and I'm so excited to have so many folks here in the room. I think the furry community can learn a lot about the Ace and Arrow communities, and I'm so glad that we have a great turnout here today. So before we get started, I just want to affirm this is not a space to debate the validity of asexuality and aromanticism, if aces and arrows are queer, whether aphobia exists or not, or any other ace discourse. If any of you are ace or arrow, you probably remember Tumblr like 2014 to 2017, and it was hell on earth, and I will not tolerate like that kind of questioning here. Like, we're going to start with the basis of, you know, this is an inclusive space. As you're talking about asexuality, you can't talk about it without sexuality, right? So I'm not going to be showing any explicit images, but if that's something that makes you uncomfortable, just be aware and take care of yourself.
Don't ask us.
I think they're testing the mic over there. Woo! Flynn was going out.
Oh no. Shoot. Feedback from the other one.
Oh, you were the one I was emailing.
Yes.
Yes.
Hello.
Seems like that's working.
Mild, please. Okay, why is it doing a raid now?
Hello.
Okay, so that should work.
Okay, thank you.
Oh, did it just go out again? No.
Okay.
There it is.
And just another quick disclaimer that we're going to be talking about some kind of heavy triggering stuff, so including aphobia, sexual violence, religious trauma. So just make sure to take care of yourselves and step out if you need to. We also have like less than an hour, so this is not going to be fully comprehensive. You can teach a whole college course on asexuality and aromanticism. So like I won't be delving into the deep like history and stuff like that, but there is a lot of rich history out there. But I'll have some resources so you can continue to read and educate yourself. I just also want to note that, I'm also only one person, so I'm only speaking on my behalf. I don't represent every single person in the Ace and Arrow community. And there's also just a lot less research and media on aromanticism. So I promise I'm not trying to favor asexuality. There's just, you know, a lot more stuff and content out there, which is a problem. Aromanticism is not just a subset of asexuality, but forgive me, you know, as we move forward. So here's our agenda for today. We're going to start with what is attraction, defining asexuality and aromanticism, challenges faced by ace and arrow people, being ace in the furry community. I'm going to share my story, further reading and resources, and then questions and answers. And then I'm hoping if you do identify as ace or arrow that you're able to stay and we can have a short meetup as well. So let's start with what is attraction. I'm really sorry about the mic, everyone. So attraction is an interest or being drawn to a person. So, and then once we have an orientation, those are patterns and or rules of the types of people we are typically attracted to and the degree to which we experience attraction. So attraction and desire are shaped by our culture, identities, and societal expectations. Something that's important for understanding asexuality and aromanticism is the split attraction model, or SAM for short. So this is the idea that there are different categories of attraction. So sexual attraction, wanting to do sexual acts with a specific person, romantic attraction, wanting to date or pursue a romantic relationship with a specific person. Sensual attraction, a desire to interact with someone in a physical but non-sexual way, just as cuddling, hugging. Aesthetic attraction, appreciating the appearance or beauty of another person. And there's even more types of attraction out there, like platonic attraction. So I think oftentimes, a lot of times people who are ace or arrow can be discredited of saying like, well, you know, actually you're just repressed. You have religious trauma. There's purity culture. You might be having gender dysphoria. You know, some people might say, oh, I was ace, but then I actually realized I'm that. You know, the way you were brought up, your parenting styles, having access to comprehensive sex education, sexual and romantic abuse or trauma, desirability politics, which is this sort of political paradigm of who we are attracted to is often socialized by oppression, like fat people, disabled people, people of color, especially people with darker skin, are often seen as less desirable by society. The loss of libido due to medication side effects. It's okay to explore being ace or arrow and later find out it's not the right identity or label for you, But I just wanted to say that experiencing these things and questioning doesn't negate you being Ace or Arrow or make you any less valid, because all factors of our life contribute to who we are as people. And you can't always parse out why you are the way you are. If you are worried about these things, I would talk to a medical professional or a therapist to kind of dive deeper. But I guess I just want to say, you know, oftentimes Ace and Arrow people are told, oh, well, you know, you just had a bad experience and you need to get over that. And, you know, for some people that might be true, but we also shouldn't throw people who've experienced that under the bus saying, oh, well, this is what made you that way. So now that we've defined attraction, we're going to define asexuality and aromanticism. So asexuality, or ace for short, is a lack of sexual attraction. Aspec, or aspectrum, means someone on the ace spectrum. So maybe not fully asexual, but might also be experiencing different things. Aromanticism, or aro for short, is a lack of romantic attraction. Arrow ace is a person who does not experience romantic or sexual attraction. Alloromantic is the opposite of aromantic, so a person who experiences romantic attraction. Allosexual is a person who experiences sexual attraction. So the ace and asexual and aromantic are both umbrella terms. So with under that, there's a lot of people who, to different extents or under certain conditions, will experience sexual romantic attraction. So microlabels can help people describe the nuance of their identities and affirm their experiences. These are not just, I mean, yes, Tumblr as a community, people may have identified these terms, but I promise you people have been feeling these ways for generations and may have just never had a word to describe what they were feeling. And you can still identify as ace or arrow even if you also fit into one of these microlabels. Like, labels are supposed to be a helpful tool. It's not meant to put you in a box. So some ace and arrow microlabels. I'm kind of combining these here because you can be demisexual, demiromantic. So that requires a strong emotional bond before attraction. Being gray sexual, gray romantic, infrequently experiences attraction. Lithio, or acheo, and I apologize if I'm mispronouncing, I've mainly just seen these written out. Attraction without the desire for reciprocation. Cupio, a desire for sex or relationship without attraction. Quirio, unable to distinguish between different types of attraction. And then nebula sexual and nebula romantic is being able, unable to distinguish between these things, but particularly due to neurodivergence. Egosexual, egoromantic, enjoys the idea of sex or romance, but does not want to participate themselves. So there's a disconnect between themselves and the object of their desire. So, you know, they always joke, like, asexual people are the people who write really smutty fanfics or make smutty fan art. These are probably your egosexual people who, you know, they might like it in fiction, but don't necessarily want it in reality. And then being ace flux or arrow flux is a desire for sex or romance that fluctuates. So attraction does not equal behavior. So asexuals can be sex favorable. They enjoy sex. They like it. They can be sex neutral, like indifferent to sex. Sex averse, so they kind of think of it negatively. But sex repulse, like you have a physical reaction to the act of sex. And same with aromantics. You can be favorable, you can like romance, but not necessarily experience romantic attraction. Romance neutral, like you're fine with it. Romance averse, you don't necessarily want it, but romance repulse, like, you know, this gives you the ick. So lacking attraction does not mean someone doesn't have a libido or won't engage in sexual acts or romantic acts. So celibacy is a lack of sexual behavior, not a lack of sexual attraction. Often what makes celibacy an abstinence this noble thing is that, oh, you are avoiding temptation and lust. But if you're an ace or arrow person, like, often I think we can kind of thrive in religious settings as kids because it's like, oh yeah, this is so easy. Why is everyone having a hard time with this? So a reason someone might still want to participate in sex, even if they are asexual, they like the physical sensation, to bond with their partner, to have children, to explore kink. There's lots of different reasons. You don't necessarily have to have an attraction to a person to engage in the act. So challenges for ace and arrow people. I think this is where often people like to invalidate ace and arrow people, like, because we don't experience oppression. And it just, you know, I think we have to realize it just looks different for us than it might for other groups. And we're not going to get anywhere by comparing our experiences to others. I'm going to talk about these systematic level issues that affect alloromantic and allosexual people as well. So compulsory sexuality. This is the pervasive belief that sex is a fundamental part of being human and necessary for living a happy and healthy life. So even in religious settings, where purity and virginity are emphasized, there is still an expectation that you will have heterosexual sex once married to have children. So people who aren't interested in sex are viewed as broken, sick, prude, frigid under this system of compulsory sexuality. So compulsory sexuality is about control. Who gets to experience pleasure and what kinds of sex are considered transgressive? So what's considered deviant? Many types of sex are demonized, such as gay sex, kink, and then you can also be hypersexualized or desexualized depending on your identities as well. So in response to sexual repression and puritanical values, sexual liberation has been embraced as progressive and radical. And for a lot of people, it can be a really transformative experience. The problem is that sex is not liberatory for everyone. And sex positivity also includes the right not to have sex. Sex is political, and it doesn't exist in a vacuum. And how this often might work is a pressure to meet a partner's sexual needs or feeling like, oh, you know, you're just repressed under the patriarchy. You know, you gotta liberate yourself. I mean, you also see this in romantic settings. Like, I mean, polyamory is a great system for a lot of people, but forcing it because it's somehow more radical is not as the progressive thing you would think it is. So compulsory sexuality hurts everyone, including allosexual people. Mononormativity. So this is the societal pressure for everyone to end up in a monogamous romantic relationship. This values romance over all other types of love and connections. And it really erodes this community support networks and places all responsibility on the individual family unit. It makes us really isolated from each other. And this, again, doesn't just hurt aromantic people, it hurts polyamorous people. People with a non-traditional family structure. So maybe it's, a partner passed away and then your sibling is helping you raise kids. There's not a lot of protections or systems in place to support a structure like that. And this gets us into singleism, which is discrimination against people not in romantic relationships. In the U.S., and I think in a lot of Western countries, everything really centers this nuclear family. So, you know, the 2.5 kids and the white picket fence. It's extremely difficult to financially or socially live on the U.S. Today, especially given inflation. And unmarried partnerships lack legal rights afforded to married couples. And if you aren't in a relationship, you're often viewed as a spinster, an old maid, a perpetual bachelor. And these stories are not often told. Like, I think what's hard about being ace or arrow is that you don't see people like yourselves reflected, and it's hard to imagine a life worth living without seeing those kinds of stories shared. And again, it hurts everyone, including alloromantic people. People might end up staying in an abusive or toxic relationship because they're really scared of being alone and they're financially dependent on their partner. So one way aromantic people kind of queer relationships is what's called a queer platonic relationship. So that's a strong desire to be close with another person. And it blurs the lines between friendship and romance, but it's not the same thing as having a best friends. So these are platonic life partners. You may live together, raise kids, share finances. This is a very serious commitment you have to each other. Alloromantic people can also be in QPRs. It's what these exactly look like is it's very hard to define. It's queer. It's queering how we look at relationships, because everyone has different definitions and boundaries of friendship versus romance. Like, some people cuddle with their friends, some people kiss their friends, some people, you know, spend all their time with their friends. So trying to distinguish what is and what isn't romance is going to be hard depending on the person. So what is it, now that we've talked about what it means to be ace and arrow, let's talk about what it means to be in the furry community. So according to Fur Science, which is like a organization that collects data on different statistics within the furry community, approximately 9% or 1 out of 11 furries identifies as asexual, while only 1% of the general population identifies as asexual. I think there's a lot that goes into that, in that a lot of people just don't even know ace or arrow identities exist, but that's the current statistics we have. So the furry community is 9 times more ace than the general population. And I think that's a kind of a trend you see, is just in general, furries tend to be way more queer than the general population. So, and I think part of that, and I think this is true for many marginalized groups, is that a lot of us feel dehumanized. Like, often the only times we might see ourselves, like any sort of resemblance in media, it's an alien, it's a robot, it's a monster. So in a way, that this kind of idea of constantly being told, you're not human for not having these desires, it's kind of embracing that and being like, you know what, well, maybe I'm not a human. Maybe I want to, like, see a future where, you know, and I think xenogender people feel this too, like, this idea that, you know, I can't comprehend my gender within humanity structures. So this idea of transhumanism is that we can, you know, and I think we see this with Therians and Otherkins too, of really feeling like your identity can belong to nature, to animals, in lots of different ways. Yeah.
Also void punk.
Sorry, can you repeat that?
Also void punk.
Void punk?
Void punk?
Oh, void punk, yes.
Yeah, that's another one.
Yes, this idea that, you know, if you're gonna be dehumanized, you might as well embrace it. I also think a lot of people explore sexual and romantic orientations through fursonas. Like, one of my fursonas is Arrow Ace, mainly because she kind of fit, she was an adopt, so she fit the Arrow Ace flag colors. And I was like, well, then I had to really think about, what would it look like for her to be Arrow Ace? Like, how would she act with her other characters? And she's like a very hippie person, which is, you know, like free love and all that. How would she fit in to that culture group? And so furries, this was also from Fur Science, are more likely to believe that asexuality would be less likely to be accepted than other sexual orientations. There's seats in the front if you all want to take a seat. But in actuality, there wasn't a statistically significant difference between actual attitudes of how asexuality was compared to other orientations. So the rate at which people accepted, you know, bisexual people, gay people, straight people, was about the same as asexual people, but there was a fear that we would be the least accepted group. And I do think part of that is due to the not safer work aspect of the fandom. And again, a lot of ace and arrow people are part of that, but I think, you know, some people might feel like, oh, well, you know, if I don't want sex or want sex less, what is that going to look like for me? And I think it's also just because asexuality is just not very known about in general, and aphobia exists in other ways, like the compulsory sexuality and amatonormativity that we talked about earlier. So I wanted to share my story too, and see if any of this resonates for folks as well. So I never dated or had interest in people the same way my friends did. That was also complicated by the fact that I'm fat, so partners weren't actively seeking me out. I was also like, really academically rigorous courses, so it was very easy to be like, well, I'm too busy to date. I'm too busy to do this stuff. And the idea of hookups always terrified me. Also complicated because I was a closeted lesbian, so I just preferred to avoid discussing my orientation and dating whenever possible. Whenever people expressed interest in me, I would usually accept because I felt like no one else would want me. And again, there's that pressure to have a romantic sexual relationship and, you know, how you're often treated better if you are partnered. Upon further reflection, I realized, okay, this actually isn't a good fit, and I would usually end up turning them down. When I finally entered a serious relationship, I had a much lower libido than my partner, to the point I was like asking my doctor about the side effects of my antidepressants. Like, I got the butterflies and infatuation, but I didn't necessarily enjoy those physical sensations. So I realized I was on the asexual spectrum, identified as gray A since I occasionally enjoyed it, but didn't necessarily crave it. Whenever I would go on dates, my dates would want to know if I had romantic feelings for them, usually by like the second or third date. And I never felt I could answer them. I cared more about developing a connection and then figuring out things along the way. Because to me, if you want someone in your life, why does the exact label matter? Turns out to alloromantic and allosexual people, it matters a lot. So I went many years without developing feelings for someone else. Like last year, I entered in a relationship with someone who was hypersexual. So I communicated that I was ace and she was willing to wait, but there was still this underlying pressure to have it eventually. And knowing she was hypersexual, I pushed myself past my own boundaries and did it for her, but I regretted it. I felt such a like emotional drop afterwards, and I just knew I had violated an essential part of myself. And it was the biggest relief to realize I never had to have sex again if I didn't want to. Realizing I was sex repulsed and that I didn't enjoy kissing was, I think, in part also realizing I was autistic and there are sensory issues around bodily fluids. But there's also plenty of autistic people who do enjoy sex. So I'm not saying that all, you know, a lot of people don't like those two to be conflated. But for me, you know, I think they were shaped by each other. So some further readings and resources. So here are some books that I drew upon and read and that I feel like have been helpful. Ace, What Asexuality Reveals About Desire, Society, and Meaning of Sex by Angela Chen. Refusing Compulsory Sexuality, A Black Asexual Lens on Our Sex-Obsessed Culture by Sharonda J. Brown. Minimizing Marriage, Marriage, Morality, and the Law by Elizabeth Brake. Singleism, What Is It, Why It Matters, and How to Stop It. And then the two organizations to reach out to, so AVEN is the Asexuality Visibility and Education Network, and then AREA, the Aromantic Spectrum Union for Recognition, Education, and Advocacy. And then this was the First Signs article I mentioned. So we're going to do some Q&A, and then afterwards we'll do a meetup for our Ace and Arrow folks. So any questions, or feel free to share your own experience. Yeah.
Well, I was going to say, I am Therry in another kin, and I am autistic, and I wanted to tell you, I don't know if you know if I have a specific type of asexuality that it wasn't mentioned. I don't know if anybody has even heard of it, is that instead of being sexually and romantically attracted to people, I am sexually and romantically attracted to cool experiences.
To experiences. Okay, what is that called?
I have no idea. I don't even know if there's a word for it, because I've literally never heard of anybody else with my sexuality.
Isn't there a word like hedonism, pleasure or something, craving pleasure? You said special experiences?
Well, not
being hedonistic.
Involves, you know, sex or romance with people, just doing really fun things.
Doing fun things.
Yeah, and I think that's, you know, we're continuing to find labels and words that, you know, might not even exist yet.
Yeah.
And I think that's going to continue to grow as we our understanding of humanity and attraction changes and grows.
Yes.
Yes, right here with the glasses.
Yeah, it's a bit of a comment. I wanted to say that I really related to what you were saying about dating someone who was hypersexual. I was dating somebody who I think might have been hypersexual as well, who would be like too cuddly and stuff like that when I wasn't in the mood for it. So, like, knowing that there's other people that are dealing with that same problem makes me feel a little bit less alone in it, because it just, like, I felt like I was the crazy one for, like, not wanting what he wanted. So, it's like,
yeah, it's really hard. That book, Ace by Angela Chen, is a great one. There's a whole chapter on allosexual and asexual relationships. Because face it, if we're 1% of the population, if you want a partnership, you're probably going to have to date someone allosexual. So trying to find compromise and boundaries, it's tough because it talks about how specifically when you're in a romantic relationship, the consent is blurred more than with a stranger. Because when you're in a relationship, the idea is, well, you know, you need to meet your partner's needs, and this is a give and take, and, you know, I think a lot of us push ourselves and place it, like, yes, it talks about different levels of consent, too. You might be willing to consent, but it's not necessarily an enthusiastic consent. With the black hat? Hi. Oh, you got more batteries?
I was going to say, I think it's definitely something we need to talk about if we need to be more like setting really the theme preference. Because I was always somebody who thought I would set boundaries. I would know exactly what to do. And then on my first date ever, as a person was like way over giving way too much attention, it was overbearing. And I pushed myself. Because I was like, I want to feel something. And in the end, I was relieved to leave.
Yeah, I think a lot of people have this similar experiences. So this person was talking about how they push themselves past their boundaries. And I think it is different in reality. What you can talk about consent all you want on paper, and then when you're in the situation, it can be hard to say. Sometimes it's not even saying no. It's just, you know, the pressure might be there. Even if it's not directly coming from your partner, it can come from societal pressure, too. With the hoodie?
So kind of experience sharing, kind of like starting a discussion. I am aerospace and sex couples. I am also a fan of transformation related media. And a lot of the time, whenever I'm like talking about that particular kind of media or like the writing or overlook or something, especially on the internet, I get hit with the assumption that, oh, it's a fetish. For me, not a case. No. To the point where, like, I went to the TF meet and greet panel last night, and I stated that, like I have a difficult time finding community in that sort of space because of that assumption. And then the very next conversation was about how a particular cartoon series or a bunch of episodes from that was the writers for the
Yeah, I think kink can be a really great resource for people, but I think it's also good, like, to distinguish of, you know, not everyone is going to be getting pleasure out of it. Like, kink is not inherently a sexual thing. And what we describe as a fetish or not, I mean, as a fat person, like, I feel very weird about how our fandom treats fat bodies, because it's often like, oh, they're so fat and big and they can't move. That's hot. I'm like, can't you just like me because of me? So I think fetishes can be awesome for a lot of people, but I think it can also, you know, that's why we say, oh, you're fetishizing me, right? Like, it doesn't apply to everyone. So it's good to find other Ace and Arrow folks who can relate. Yeah, right here.
How did you end up figuring out that you were aromantic? It's like, I know solidly I'm asexual, but I can't necessarily correlate my desire for a romantic relationship with the fact that I've never really had a romantic feeling towards a person.
Right. Well, I mean, I would say if you've never had romantic feelings for someone, that's probably maybe, or it could be there are certain circumstances, like, you know. The hard thing with being demi-romantic, though, is anyone else here demi-romantic? Okay, a few folks. It's kind of awkward when you can only develop feelings for your friends because then you don't want to ruin the friendship. It's like a catch-22. And I think it's, like, that's the thing is, alloromantic people, like, it's very hard to articulate what attraction feels like in orientation. But, you know, if you're questioning it, I think that could be a sign that you're somewhere on the spectrum. I've heard it's kind of like that infatuation to me, the difference between like a QPR or romance is that there's often these grand gestures, right? So marriage, proposals, anniversary gifts, rose petals. It's kind of this grandeur, and that doesn't look the same for everyone, right? But there's sort of a performative aspect of, you know, it's our 6-month anniversary on Facebook. Like, there's kind of this, you want to share this level of commitment. I feel like queer platonic can be, it's a little more quiet. Like, I don't know if any of you've heard that quote. It's like, queer, like, romance is hot air balloon rides and champagne glasses and rose petals. Queer platonic is using those, like, phones with the, like, made out of paper or the tin cans in a bunk bed. Like, there's still that level of closeness and intimacy. And I think what's hard for a lot of folks is a lot of us were able to have those relationships when we were younger. We didn't always have to define those things. And as an adult, you know, we feel like we have to put a label on it. But I think, yeah, maybe talking to, like, friends and family, too, seeing, like, oh, how do we interact? And I think at the end of the day, too, like, if you care about a person, what you actually call it, like, it's your connection and your relationship, too. But you're welcome in the aromantic community if you want to explore that. And if you don't want to later, that's totally cool, too. Right here.
I also just want to add in one of the funnest things to do, especially for people on the spectrum and people who are questioning, is just to, like, find online communities like a Discord, having those discussions about what is attraction, what it feels like, and kind of sorting out your own feelings and talking about that with other people and helping them along and kind of figure out what they're feeling is a ton of fun. And it's also, it feels like every conversation you always learn or get a better understanding of yourself and of, like, kind of attraction overall.
Yeah, I think hearing, sometimes when you're neurodivergent, it feels like you're walking through life not being able to look at a mirror. Like, you can't always, like, see your experiences reflected back. So definitely talking with other people and being like, well, I feel this or don't feel this, and hearing other people's perspectives. You got to be careful with alloromantic people, though, because, you know, oftentimes for us who are aromantic or autistic, we'll do things and people will be like, oh my God, you were flirting with them. And it's like, was I? I thought I was just being friendly and nice, but clearly we have different definitions here.
I was just going to ask, I hope this is okay, because I don't know if anyone else here has the same thing that I have, in which I feel romantic and sexual feelings for having fun.
Yeah, I don't know. That's maybe something we could discuss at the meetup.
Okay.
Which let's take these last few questions,
okay,
and then we'll get to getting to talk with each other. Holding the fursuit head.
So I sort of came here because my closest friend is on the ace and arrow spectrum, and I kind of wanted to learn more about it. And I guess my general question to the room is, like, how can I be a better ally to my ace and arrow friend?
I'd start by just not, like, questioning them about it, like, being like, hey, oh, okay, that's cool. And just kind of, like, not trying to make a reason as to why they couldn't be this. That's something that a lot of ace people kind of run into, and it's kind of, like, it's upsetting whenever we tell somebody that we're ace, and then they come back with a bunch of, like, reasons as to why they think we're not.
I might ask two. Yeah, I might ask two. What that looks like for them, like I was talking with all these micro labels. Like, there are, you know, they could be someone who's very into, like, kink or sex. And so just, I guess, maybe not making assumptions, asking, like, what are you comfortable with? What are you not comfortable with? And I think it's going to be dismantling, and this is a societal level, this idea that to be a healthy and happy human being, you have to be having sex and be in a relationship. Anyone else with thoughts on that?
Yeah. And the big thing is, first off, thank you for wanting to support your friend, because that's huge. As someone who is, I am very complicated in my heterosexuality. to be the person that's going to be able to tell you the best what they would need from you. Everyone's experience is different than any sexuality. I mean, romance is about what they need from someone else in their community. I don't like sexual jokes. It makes me uncomfortable. And people think it's cute because I blush and funny, and it's not for me. But someone else might think that's hilarious. So have those conversations because it's very different for everyone.
Let's get maybe like two more questions. Well, we only have so much time, and I want to make sure all of us get a chance to do the meetup. So if you have a question and you're not going to share an experience, because we can talk about the meetup. Question, yes.
How do you get over the feeling of just feeling bad if your partner is hypersexual? Even if they're understanding, I still just feel bad.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of guilt and shame in it. I think you got to navigate it with communication and talking with your partner. It's going to look different for everyone. For some people, like what me and my partner was going to do is open up to polyamory. But the thing with polyamory is I was like, yeah, you can do all this. But when I started talking about, oh, well, I want to go on dates, she's like, oh, well, why would you need to? I'm the one who's hypersexual, you know? It could be, you know, finding, you know, non-sexual things like kink or masturbation or things like that that can still have them meeting their needs. Or it could just be a mismatch. I think you also have to realize, like, we all give in different ways, too. And I think it's this whole compulsory sexuality that says sex is the number one reason and most important thing in a relationship. So, like, I always think it's silly of, like, well, how come the factor of I want my partner to play video games with me, how come that doesn't get to be higher on people's lists? So, you know, I think believing your partner if they say they're okay with it, and, you know, it's hard. I think, you know, talking with support networks and therapists, too. And we can chat more about that, too. I'll take one last question. Yes. Yeah, I think that's reciprocal sexual, the idea of like, or maybe it's QPO. There's a lot of terms of, well, this person reciprocates, or I don't want them to reciprocate. So there definitely is community and terms out there. I think sometimes just Googling or going on ACE Discords or things like that, people can help you find the right language. Or you can make up a term for yourself, too. Okay, any last questions? Okay, yes.
There's something that I haven't really understood and something that I've just seen around the internet in regards to asexuality. I've seen like people talk about this online, how people who are like question if like they're ace, but maybe they'd like to have kinks or would like to like pleasure themselves, but they start questioning like, does that still make me like ace or not? And I wanted to know, like what is the deal with people that feel that way? Not saying there's anything wrong with that sort of thing. I know people who sometimes feel that way, so I want to know, like what that kind of thing's all about.
Yeah, I mean, again, libido is very different, so that's a sex drive. And often asexuality means it's not directed towards anything, an undirected sex drive. So for a lot of people, that can look like fantasies where you're thinking about like the experience, but you're not thinking of a specific person in mind. It's kind of this vague concept of sexuality. I think also bodies are weird and, you know, arousal, you know, doesn't necessarily mean you have an attraction towards a specific person or maybe in specific settings. But yeah, I mean, again, it's hard to know exactly where you might fit, and that's going to take a lot of experimentation and seeing like that, but there are definitely sex-favorable aces out there who, you know, still feel that, but don't necessarily want it directed towards someone. So I want to make sure all of us, so if you are allo, if you wouldn't mind just making space for folks who are ace and arrow, just so we can have a chance to chat among ourselves, exchange contact information. We can turn chairs around and just make it kind of a casual thing, just check in with one another. And we have about, I think we're supposed to get out of here at like 3:20 or 5:20. So like 10 minutes just to like hang out.